All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pony Sync for Wednesday, November 22nd. Let's see. Today we have with us Andrew Turley, myself, Sean Allen, Theo, Scott Fritchie, Joe, back from he's back from Sweden. Were you around last week, Joe? Or were you still in Sweden?
I was here last week.
That's right. You were.
Yeah, it was the week before I was at Uruguay.
That's right. And Matthias as well. All right, so I'm gonna dig right into some pull requests here. Here's a new one. Just opened up. So let's see. Let's start with 2358. That is make take while short circuit. It's from Theo. Let's see, what is this resolve? Ah, I see. Okay, so, hey, Theo, can you explain something to me?
Yeah, sure.
What exactly does it mean for take while to support an infinite iterator? Wouldn't that mean it just goes on forever?
That's its current behavior, which is absolutely not what it should do. I do not know why that's how it's always seemed to work.
Can you explain? If you're not gonna, what is it supposed to do then? I'm confused. I mean, it take while, and if you give it an infinite number of things, why wouldn't it go on forever? What is take while supposed to do in that case? I guess.
So when the predicate returns, false the first time, it should just stop because it's no longer taking from the iterator. So what it currently does is that it will, when you ask for the next item, or actually I think if you even call has next, it will infinitely loop trying to figure out the next thing in the infinite iterator that may or may not return true, which is unnecessary because it should just never return anything after that.
Wait, it hits a predicate that would cause it to exit, but it's not exiting? That's the bug right now? Oh, okay, I understand.
So if you call has next and it's an infinite iterator, it will just go on forever trying to figure out whether or not it should not do anything, even though it should never do anything.
Oh, okay, all of this makes a lot more sense to me now. I didn't understand from the issue or from how the code was what was actually going on with it, but I'm not super familiar with that part of the code.
I have some vague memories of when parts of that were being put together with the first pass of the iterator library, and I think there was some weirdness around has next and how some of that stuff's implemented. So
I got it. This makes complete sense to me now. Thank you, Theo.
This also raises another question that Matthias brought up that actually has been in my head a little bit recently, which is whether or not it should be expected that an iterator raises an error after has next returns false.
Wait, does it return an error right now or no?
Most iterators do, but for example, in collections, the range and reverse iterators do not. They just keep, even if has next is false, they will still return values.
I hate our iterators. I think they're awful. Oh my God, I hate them so much for multiple reasons. But
that was something we wanted to discuss on this call. Was it you, Theo, that said you wanted to discuss that this week?
Yeah.
You just made me hate them even more, Theo. So good job. Good job.
So the question is, I think we should spend some time maybe at the end of this call trying to come up with some ideas about how we might rework iterators so that they can still be good for performance, but maybe not as ambiguous as they are now.
There's another, I don't if you saw the fix for intersection as well, that's an iterator related problem as well, right?
Yeah, that too. that's a much more difficult problem.
But it's one that we already did. had a discussion. So I don't know. Does Matthias, it seems like you took a look at this. Does this look good? Yes. Merge now?
So like we should definitely have this discussion, but like if we like I can totally live with our checking for next airing. Yes. So I just formally approve.
Alrighty. Let's boom. Okay, I'm gonna boom. Boom. That's been boomed. And then we can talk about iterators later. Cool. All right. Ooh, there's going to be a lot of good fixes in this next release. Okay. 2355. Improved work stealing scheduler's blocked logic. With its really big pros and its smaller con. So, Joe, in answer to your 5-second question, and could we make it compile time? I would like to merge this to fix, it does a really good job of mostly or completely closing a couple longstanding bugs we have, and then we could figure out how to what the proper strategy is in order to handle things like, yeah, it would suck if I want to run Pony Stable as part of some little thing and have it, you know. And that it, where I know this is not going to be a long running thing, and it waits like 5 seconds before it's gonna exit.
I'm okay with that. Were you wanting to do a release in between now and then with the sort of in between version, or
maybe depends on how long it takes for us to come up with a solution. We got the back pressure stuff. We got this. We're moving towards a release. For Wallaroo, and I'd like to do that release, which is probably in like a week or so. I'd like to do the Pony C release at the same time, so that we pick up the stuff from that. Is there's also, you know, there's a breaking change in this, and I'd like to get us synced up with that.
I think that makes sense. Can we make it part of the release notes though? That like, hey, a short running program is going to stay. And take longer to terminate than it did before.
Yeah.
I think if we have that release note, I think I'm fine with it. I just don't want to be dropping.
Yep. I think that's good.
I think if somebody sees this and they don't understand it, the first thing they're going to think is, wow, Pony takes a long time to clean up everything.
Yeah, I agree with that. In terms of your compile thing, I was wondering if it shouldn't be, if maybe it's a runtime option, like the way the JVM used to have those client and server flags that don't really do anything meaningful anymore. But you know, something like that, like for it where one of them is default, either something like client or server, and then it's if you do client, it's got a short period of time before it sends the block message, and if you do server, it's got like that long, like 5 second or something like that period of time.
Yeah, that could be it. I think you can make an argument for runtime or compile time. The reason I said compile time is because I think we were having another conversation recently about Pony no block.
They didn't have
a compile time option for that.
Yeah, compile time probably makes more sense there because it's probably going to be based on the program itself, and it's not like that's going to change from one time to another, right?
Yeah, I mean you could say the same thing on this other thing, but I don't know.
Go ahead, keep going.
Oh, I was just saying that. Yeah, I think that there's probably more investigation needs to be done about like what the best user experience is there, but. Yeah,
I also think just as a like if we add more of these compile time options like that, I think it would be good to be able to have like to be able to put those in, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but you know, like for as much as I like having make and things like that, having a Pony specific build tool that knows how to like I can set this and just have it work correctly might be a nice thing.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing would be something akin to like a pragma sort of directive.
Oh, yeah.
But then the question is, I guess if you have conflicting pragmas in source files, I guess you'd get a compiler error that says we can't satisfy both of these. So I guess it'd be okay.
Does anybody, before I merge this, does anybody have any questions or concerns about 2355?
I wonder in general if we could come up with a smarter heuristic that doesn't require this, but you know, I don't want it to block this progress. So.
Yeah, I mean, like I was like, I don't know what the better heuristic is right now. This just seemed like one where I was like, here we go. This should probably take care of most of the problem, and we can come back and try and improve it later, right? That was my thought. And then I tried to do the really, I think I added more lines of comment than I added in terms of code. I tried to explain what's going on there. It's great. The first time I did this, it was wrong. Oops. I need to edit my commit. What, line 300 is wrong. That's bad. Hold on. Not proper pony format. I do that all the time. I use not proper pony format.
So since the check for, was it 2 billion cycles or whatever?
10 billion. Yeah.
10 billion. Since that's a hack that we want to get rid of, and it could be surprising to people how crazy to add a printf saying, hey, I was waiting because of a temporary hack.
I don't like that. Now I have some foreign output coming from my pony program that seems weird to me and could mess up what I'm expecting to get out of my program.
That is true. That would be surprising in a different dimension, but anyhow, if anyone feels it's terrible,
I don't know that it's a hack. I we need something like this. I don't think it's necessarily the best heuristic, but we're going to need something that's time-based, probably. It's a question of what's the right amount of time and how do we figure that out. Like we could do a heuristic like where I was thinking about it, where we keep track of the number of times that we've gone through or how long the program has been running. But I mean, all of these have potentially like a high overhead for these versus, just having, you know, like this somewhat large value that's there. I mean, maybe 5 seconds is too long. Maybe it should be 1 second. You know, I'm not exactly sure on that. I think there's as Scott knows, there's a change that I'm testing, which is a change to when stuff that's in a local thread Alloc pool gets shared out, which should also really help with some of the runaway memory stuff that we've seen. And I think what we'd want for the value for this is quite possibly going to change once that's in place as well. So good to squash for now? Yeah?
Go for it.
Alrighty. Squash. After I found my, I formatted it Sean C style in one place, not Pony, AKA Sylvan in Andy one. Okay. Okay. 2350. that Matthias, that's your fixed range with negative or zero step and allow backwards ranges?
Yes. So range was previously silently ignoring negative ranges. And if step was zero, it was also silently without detection iterating. So I added some documentation to it and fixed all the possible ranges. So it feels like it was so nice and simple, and it feels a little bloated now. It's just like, it's definitely a fix that should be done. I just wanted to check for your, like, if that fits your taste.
So the assert range thing, like in the tests, Matthias, right?
Yes.
543 or whatever. So that first one where it says 001 and then it's got an empty thing. How do I read those? How do I read those values?
It's some like unreadable test helper. It says create a range from 0 to 0 with step 1. And assert that it doesn't do anything.
So then 0 to 1 with a -1, that creates, that returns an infinite range. Yes.
0 to 0 with -1. No.
That's like line 549.
Yes. That's infinite because it's not moving min towards, so it's not moving 0 towards 1. So that's how range is working. It just adds the step to the start and then keeps adding, and so it's... There are lots of cases where range could be like infinite, iterating infinitely. So, and this is detectable now.
Yeah, so I feel like this has something that threw me for a loop before. So if I did a range from 1 to 0 and I said it's step of 1, that's an infinite, right? Whenever I see that, I always feel like that should go down by 1, but I guess that doesn't actually make sense. But that's always what I expect in my mind to happen, if that makes any sense. Right. Well, this is one from 0 to 10, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so I'd always expect, like, if I took from 10 to 0 and the steps are 2, I'd expect to get 8, 6, 4, 2, and 0, right? The opposite of, like, what's on 557. But that's just, like...
It could also be crap, so just...
Yeah, that's how... But, I mean, this seems right for what we have. And comments from anyone?
I commented that looks right to me.
If I ever proposed an RFC where when you're going down, that you don't have to use a negative in order to move down, would people find that weird, or would that be an RFC that might be something that people think would be good? Just out of curiosity while we're here on this.
Yes, I would. Like if it's not specified, and then take the take a -1 or +1 as a step, default step, is fine for me.
So there are.
I can also just silently craft and build it into this pull request.
I don't think it should, but it seems like if we were going to change the meaning of that step when you're going down, that should require an RFC. But I was just wondering if I'm the only person who feels like that's how it should work, or if there might be support possibly for the that idea as an RFC.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about it is that you can't specify a negative step if the type A for your range is unsigned.
Oh, yeah.
So, So yeah, in that light, I think that what you're saying is probably appropriate. Because if I have a range where I'm iterating over U size and I want to do it downward, I don't really have a way to do that using range.
Right.
Right now.
Maybe that's how I originally got that into my head. I don't remember. Okay. So, Matthias, it looks like you have three commits here, but it probably shouldn't be three commits. Do you want to do the squash on this so that you can get a good commit comment for the one thing that's there?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll leave that to you to squash and fix it up. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Um, 2329. Did that have the requested changes done yet? Doesn't I guess it doesn't look like it, Benoit? That is it still waiting for a change, yes? Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Sorry, which one?
2329, add null terminator for file source read. Looks like you commented on it 8 minutes ago.
Yes, it still needs a change.
Okay. Is Gordon on this one? Gordon. Hey, Gordon, you're here.
Sorry, I'm late.
Oh no, it's cool. So let's talk about my crazy idea on 2303 for a minute, shall we?
Yeah. How would we warn people? Like,
I don't. So wait, here, let me give a little background in case everybody hasn't read it. So one of the things that's come up is that like there are folks on things like Arch and everything who are having a hard time building Pony because Arch has like LLVM 5, I think, now. And Gordon has LLVM 4 and 5 building with Pony, but there's a performance hit that's taken to get around a bug that's in those LLVMs. And my thought was we should consider merging support for 4 and 5 down so that people could at least build and play around with Pony and then try to put some kind of big warning on it where it's like, hey, if you're using these, you're not going to get, there's a definite performance hit while we work around this, etc., and continue to keep like 391 as the advised LLVM to use.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
What do other folks think?
Sounds reasonable to me.
I've left a comment on the pull request.
Okay.
So personally, I would rather prefer to merge this without the workaround, because looking at the LLVM bug that introduced it, I'm going to paste it in chat.
It won't pass CI if the workaround is not in place.
The standard
library tests will fail.
Yes, but so here's the change. So basically what it is saying is that the compiler will try to move stores from inside the loop after the loop, if the store is if the pointer in which the store is done isn't captured, and if the store location is a stack location, and I don't think that the workaround will fix all cases of the bug, because what the workaround is doing is But let me take the code.
Are you about to put something else in the chat, Benoit?
No, I'm scrolling in the code.
Okay, all right, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, here it is. So, there. So, the workaround is saying that we won't try to transform a heap allocation into a stack allocation. If we ever try to read from the allocation location. So given the LLVM change that introduced the bug, I don't think that it will fix every case of the bug. And I think we're just lucky that the workaround fixes what's happening in the standard library test.
If
so, my suggestion on that would be to merge it without the workaround and without CI for 4.0 and 5.0, and to have a warning in the make file when building from source that says that there can be with for LLVM 4 or 5.
Can be. It sounds more like it's going to happen, right?
Yes.
I mean, like the standard library won't even pass, like make tests. So, like, it's gonna happen. I mean, I'm not sure why we would want to have that, other than we want to keep Gordon's work from getting further and further out of date, potentially, right? I think there's a lot of overhead for him to try and keep that up to date. And I think it could make sense to merge those down, but I'm not sure we'd even want it to detect and locate LLVM 4 and 5 at that point if we know that it's going to, like, if we know that it's going to crash on folks.
Yeah, we could do that. And also, regarding ArchDX and Pony, it seems that there is still an LLVM 3.9 package in the repository. I'm going to paste the link in the chat. So it looks like Pony can still be installed on Arch Linux. So maybe there are other distributions where that's not possible. But yeah, so it seems that for Arch Linux, it is still possible.
I'd like to mention that on my distribution, which is Solus, it only has 5.0.
Okay. So, I'm not strongly opposed to merging with the workaround, but my preference would go to merging it without the workaround until we fix the bug once we know why it's happening.
So can you repeat that last bit one more time, Benoit? Sorry, I didn't quite catch it all.
I'm not opposed to merging Gordon's pull request with the workaround, but my preference would go to merging it without the workaround if folks aren't opposed to that.
Joe, what are your thoughts?
I mean, if the standard libraries have don't compile, I mean, I don't know. It seems like that's kind of a baseline of what we'd want to merge. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the opinion that what we should probably just do here is print a warning in the make file if your LLVM version is one of the ones where we have this performance problem due to the way this is worked around. So I think just warning you when compiling Pony is probably enough.
So would that be as one we warn you that there's, we'd probably want to have, I think we'd want to have something in the README warning about this, both of the performance problem and the fact that I think Benoit's right. We should call it experimental and say that it's possible that there could be crashing bugs from this as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so we already warn people if they're trying to compile, the make file that we have already warns people if they're using an unsupported LLVM version. So we have a place for doing that there. I just think that we should, you know, call this and you're using an experimental LLVM version that may have performance problems and or crashing.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. But and that would be that, but that would be with the workaround that Gordon has. So at least the standard library passes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be okay with the code going in, but not anything in the make file to try and use 4 or 5. If we know that the standard library won't pass, like that feels like the minimum bar to me, right? For we could still put the code in, but I wouldn't want to advertise in any fashion that it's there at all if the standard library doesn't at least pass. So, Benoit, would you be okay with the workaround going in with the, this is experimental, there's performance problems, it still might also crash on you?
Yes, sounds good to me. Okay. Also, Gordon, could you add a comment in genup.cc where the workaround is?
Sure, I can do that.
Thank you.
This workaround, this will only impact on LLVM 4 and 5, right? If I'm using 3.9.1, it won't impact on it? Gordon?
I had better double check that.
Okay, that because I wouldn't want to cause pain for other folks. Then if that looks good, can you also put like some kind of note in like the README as well that says, you know, this will work, that, you know, LLVM 4 or 5 is experimental or something? Like I think we should have it in the README as well. At least a note in the README for if you're building from source, you know, 4 and 5 have these problems, you know, like where it lists what the supported ones are. That's my thought, but I don't know, what you guys think on that.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me.
Does that sound good to you, Joe and Benoit?
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to try and warn people as much as possible, you know, like, hey, it's going to be a thing. Okay. Okay, so awesome. So woo, that will be good. I believe next up, let me move the needs discussion during sync. Okay. Before we move on to general discussion, Scott came and joined us today. Want to go over add dtrace probes to all message push and pop operations, 2295. Hey Scott, you wanna take people through the basics of all the performance testing and whatnot on this?
Yeah, sure. The gold standard, according to Sean, because it's a punishing mix of stuff, is the Wallaroo Market Spread app. Jonathan Brown, a colleague at Wallaroo Labs, was kind enough to run it for me, and he had said that there were no changes in the throughput. of the Pure Pony app, and that the latency is reported at each of the processing stages in the pipeline. Also didn't change. It looked exactly the same according to the metrics reporting done as part of the larger system. So that's great news, but that was a test that he ran before the final squash and rebase and whatnot. So if folks were still concerned, I can ask him to run that again with the PR in its current form, and now rebased and merge conflicts fixed after the recent scheduler changes that Sean had done.
I'm not worried about that personally.
Okay. So the other is that if you were paying careful attention to the examples part of the repo the last few weeks, there's a new example added called the message ubench or microbench, microbenchmark app for creating a bunch of actors that send ping messages to other actors, and then each time an actor gets a ping message, it sends another ping message to another randomly chosen actor. And the Erlang message sending and part of my brain felt that this was a good exercise, and that I also wanted to have something that would stress message passing part of the system to help Sean with finding bugs and races and deadlocks in the scheduled work he was doing. And so the test that I ran was to create 320 pinger actors. Five pings are sent to each one of those actors, and then they start doing the random stuff. And then once a second, activity stops and throughput is reported, and then the loop repeats. So the flags are there in the comment that I have at the end of the ticket of how exactly to run the thing. It includes the measurements I took, included the pony no block flag, and also the pony threads equal to 7. And there was no difference with this PR versus the base of the PR. So going backward one commit to get back to the master branch, there was no difference when compiled without dtrace. And with dtrace on my OSX box, there was about a 4.8 performance degradation. So Benoit, I think you're most concerned about performance when there was a default build without dtrace, and there seems to be quite good news there.
Okay, so that's nice.
Woo! The gist has some histograms that I had cooked up analyzing the data and drawing histogram and using the student t-test for determining whether or not the runs were sufficiently identical.
That sounds pretty awesome. I would say this something else changed scheduler C, so you're going to need to rebase one more time, Scott. But then I think
excellent. When I just love merge conflicts. Yay!
But when you do, right, I'm good with you merging it. Anybody else? Benoit, yeah.
I'm taking a look at it.
Okay.
There seems to be some indentation issues in messageq.c. Aside from that, it looked good.
Can you highlight them? But I think I see the ones you're talking about, like line 60.
Yes.
Is there anything other than line 60? That's the only one I'm seeing right now.
I've not seen anything else.
Oh yeah, here we go, 210.
Yes.
So I'm noting those as here, Scott, so there'd be a couple of small ones, but you can...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I didn't even notice them the first time. It looks like there's only those. It looks like only those two. Yeah. Yep. Cool. Okay. So we're more than halfway through. So I believe it was we wanted to talk about iterators. Yes, was that the topic that we wanted to have here?
Yeah, if we can come up with any good ideas. So yeah, reiterate on those issues that you brought up and we brought up earlier. There was the one about basically has next and next and who to trust among that pair. And then Sean, you brought up another issue of iterating over a collection that you're mutating. Is that what you were alluded to earlier?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I'm not, so on that second point, I'm not sure what could be done other than maybe some kind of syntax for requiring that, like, within this block, your references to the collection that you're not supposed to mutate get downgraded to a box. But that's something that would be, with the way iterators are constructed now, it's something that's rather difficult to enforce because every, when you reach into to iterate over a collection, your iterator doesn't necessarily link by syntax to the thing that it's iterating over, because the iterator is a separate object. You can pass the iterator separately without holding the original collection. It would be hard to be something that you would enforce. That it would probably have to be something that the way our iterators are structured now, it would probably have to be something that you'd opted into by saying, okay, I'm iterating over this iterator, which touches this collection. So within this block, don't let me mutate that collection, like as an opt-in thing. Another interesting point of view on that, that actually makes me think of would be to, this is just sort of a brainstorming idea that popped into my head at the moment. It may not be a good one, but if we treated iterators as something that hold the state of what you're iterating over, but you have to pass them back to, like, they hold the state of iteration, but you have to pass them back to the collection that you're iterating over, if they're part of a collection, so in order to access it. So it would be sort of like, okay, I'm iterating over an array. I call the dot values method that gives me some object that I can pass to a either it accepts the array box as an argument to it, or there's an probably that's how it would probably work. Yeah. So it would accept array box as an argument to its next and has next method rather than storing it internally, and it would hold whatever state it needs to know where to look in that. So that way you would require that the collection reference is a fundamental part of the iteration. But however, that breaks down in the case of these iterators that you set up to be kind of like meta iterators or infinite iterators that aren't mapped to a collection directly. That may not be a good idea, or there may just be some other level of detail to it that I'm not thinking of at the moment.
So the way I know it from the Java collection is that if you while iterating over, say, an array list and delete an item from it during that, you get an exception on the next call, because it maintains a flag either the ArrayList itself or the iterator that the ArrayList did change. And on each next call, it's checked that and just arrowing out if that happened. So there's a implementation-wise, a rather simple one, maybe hard to detect. So in application code, using that.
Yeah.
But it should work actually for all mutable collections that we have, if they all, as I know it, have a reference to the actual collection.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about that is that, so there's a couple of things about that. So if calling next raised an error, either because you're done with the iteration, or because you mutated it, then now that error has two different meanings, and you can't distinguish between those two. And the other thing is that we have reference capabilities. It would be really nice if we could figure this out at compile time instead of at runtime.
I would agree with that statement.
But at the same time, I'm not sure that it's possible even with the scheme that I outlined earlier, because you could be holding a ref reference to that somewhere else that wasn't within the local body of the iteration, and you're calling a method that has access to that, and the local analysis of your loop can't tell that you're mutating in this other method somewhere else, unless maybe it. Yeah. So basically, you'd have to, in order to really get this guarantee with the way Pony does things, you'd have to be iterating over an ISO and take temporarily control over that ISO and then give it back at the end of the loop.
I had the thought of in general, like if you take a language like Smalltalk, for example, or you also see it in Ruby, is the methods to iterate over things rather than the iterator being a separate class, you're calling something like, you know, each on your collection object and passing you know, like a block or a lambda type thing to be executed for each one. And I wonder if an approach like that might not end up potentially providing us with a better way of doing that rather than having this external iterator class, which is much more of a Java type approach.
Yeah, I kind of like the each with the block style, but it is less versatile, I think. I'm trying to think. There may be ways to accomplish all the same things. I'm not sure. I think it's less versatile because it doesn't give you a chance to carry that partially iterated state around with you, or to, you know, to say that, okay, I'm going to iterate this far and then pass this off to some other object to now hold and iterate over.
So perhaps we could do a combination of both, but the external iterators, you could only do it on readable things that are not writable, like Val. That would certainly remove a lot of problems from them, right? If you're not allowed to update the state of this thing while it's while the iterator is happening.
So I'll also say that I don't think this prevents you from mutating the collection that you're iterating over either, unless you unless you put the requirements of the lambda such that you can't pass any mutable state into it and get that back out, right? Like, but that would prevent you from doing simple things like, okay, I've got a list of X, I want to iterate over that and push some of them onto my list Y.
Yeah.
So as long as because if I can pass in list Y and mutate that and get the reference back, then I could also pass in list X that I'm iterating over and mutate that. So I don't think it prevents the problem. I mean, I don't know. My general expectation actually, you know, this comes from being over in Ruby land a lot of times in my day job. My general expectation was actually to assume that iterating over a collection that you're mutating at the same time has some kind of guarantees about how it behaves, even if it's not full guarantees that there's some kind of like documented behavior of you're at least guaranteed to see every item from when you started, but you may see other items too, or some level of semantics that you could bank on while being allowed to mutate the array or other collection. But that depends on how the iterator is implemented, and some stronger semantics may give you worse performance for the iterator.
True.
So on the next versus has next issue, Benoit, I think you spent some time trying to come up with a. So I think at one point you were investigating this and the reasons why we have both of them, and that's as I understand it, the reason why we have both next and has next. The main reason is you don't want the error that next throws to be a performance problem when you can just use a Boolean to abort the loop. Is that the main reason why we have that?
Yes, and what I was investigating in particular was that the old sugar of the loop was using continue when as next was returning true, but next was raising an error, and that was resulting in bad optimizations. So I changed it to make use of break instead, and that resulted in better optimizations.
So from the languages, I know that like all the iterators have both methods. And the standard protocol is before every call to next, you should check has next. And if after has next has returned false, behavior is kind of undefined. So expect everything. There'll be great. And I'm kind of with that. As long as it's well documented, as long as we scream it into the user's face,
yeah, I agree for this specifically on whether or not next should raise an error if has next returns false. I think I really am fine with either way on the decision as long as it's documented like in the iterator interface as well as in the iter tools package.
One maybe counter argument against internal iteration, the other issue we discussed, like with each and all this stuff, is that I don't know who, but someone found out that I guess a fold or something is 10 times slower than a iteration, like a plain iteration. So we don't, so it might be harder to do optimizations with this block-based approach.
I think I remember it being about 3 times slower, and it's because the lambdas include a virtual call, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the reason.
Right, yeah, which the compiler could theoretically be smart enough to create a concrete type for that and use it instead of the virtual call, but it's just not doing that at the moment. Because bidirectional inference is hard. So, but I think this brings up an interesting point. To Sean's earlier point about having the lambda-based option for an iterator, if you want it around, the iterator interface could contain a default implementation of each. That does a for loop with has next and next and takes a lambda, and then any iterator that explicitly inherits from that explicitly uses is iterator would get that default implementation of each.
Mm-hmm. But I would expect. The each on the collection itself. No. It's fine either way.
I mean, if we put it on the collection itself, then my only concern is that things that have multiple iterators that can be returned from them end up with. The number of those is multiplied to accommodate each. Anyway, it sounds like we're probably not going to come to a concrete conclusion about this during this call. Maybe we should ask if anybody else has anything they want to bring up for the call. Yeah. Or I guess we're running out of time, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we definitely are.
I'm gonna write up a quick RFC issue, so to like just have raised the problem somewhere, and if anybody finds anything interesting or has any thoughts, just drop it there.
Sounds great.
Yeah, and from what I take from this conversation, the return value of next is pretty much undefined. Like it shouldn't necessarily raise an error if hasNext returns false. So I'm gonna open up PR for adding documentation, making that explicit.
So do we have a concept are we saying that it's acceptable? Like, do we have a concept of something that is a misbehaving iterator that we wanna document, or should we just say all of these, any possible iterator implementation is valid and you have to be prepared for it by using this approach?
I think an iterator properly as long as once it has returned, like has next being false, it does not then switch to true.
Yeah.
The only thing I can really think of.
It's and interesting
also, if hasNext is true, it doesn't raise an error, but I'm not really sure if that makes a lot of sense considering the fact that it's an external iterator.
It's interesting that hasNext is a fun ref. Does anybody know why that is?
Because sometimes it needs to change the state of the iterator.
Why is that though? Shouldn't next be the only one to change the state of the iterator?
If you look in the iter tools package, there are some cases where has next to change some stuff. I can't call outside of the iter tools package if that happens anywhere.
That's interesting. Okay. Okay.
it seems to me probably could be implemented to always be read-only, but it may be more, the logic may be more complex if you force it to do that. But it might be able to prevent the problem of one that switches back to returning true later, as long as you haven't called next in between. But okay, anyway, that's a little bit off topic. Okay, so we're saying an iterator behaves correctly as long as has next, once it's flipped to false, never goes back to true. And it's okay if next keeps returning things without errors while has next is false. But you're supposed to, as the caller, you're expected to respect has next instead of only next.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's reasonable, yeah, as long as we document it. So that would be cool if that's what you're working on.
Cool. All right. So are we at an end here? Or does anybody have anything else they want to cover really quickly? All right. I'm going to call it then and hit stop.